listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific Standard Time, my guests and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Our topic today, being true to yourself while changing those parts of your life you wish were different. And I'm thrilled to have as my co-host again today, a former radio personality who worked for stations from Mississippi to California, Melody Fox. Now, not only is she back on the radio, but she goes by Dr. Melody Fox, as she is a California licensed psychologist and marriage and family therapist. Melody currently has a private practice in Newport Beach, California, where she works with adults and their relationships, as well as teens and their families. Melody, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back here.
Hey, I'm happy to have you back. So how was your weekend?
Oh, it was great. I had a chance to take my niece to Disneyland, and I was thrilled to see all, in the best sense of the word, Disneyland dads. I really enjoy these fathers with their little girls and their sons and playing around Disneyland with them and taking them on rides. And it was so important, that relationship between fathers and their children, especially their daughters. So it was really exciting to see.
All right. So for this weekend, do you think you were true to yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I was the biggest kid in the world.
I love it. Well, today we're going to explore the meaning of personal truth and the steps it takes to make important changes in our life. Changes that will allow all of us to reclaim our power and truth and experience abundance. Our guest today is personal growth and development coach Nick Barrar. Throughout his 25-year career, Nick has designed and conducted numerous consulting projects in the areas of leadership, stress management, team building, and professional development. Nick has published a book and program outlining the principles of the Your Choice workshops. Nick, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Alan, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and I had a chance to meet you a little bit earlier before today, and I appreciate your dedication and your commitment, and you have this sense of presence with you and about you, even when I met you a few months ago, so I'm delighted to be here and support what you're up to.
Well, thank you, and it is certainly a pleasure to have you. Both Melody and I had a chance to go over your website and to look at a lot of what it is that you're doing, and we noticed that the majority of it seemed to be based around personal truth. So for starters, I mean, define for us and for our listeners your definition of personal truth.
Well, I want to change it a little bit, because my truth is not necessarily somebody else's personal truth, but the personal truth is really something that comes from inside you, a little deeper place in your soul, something that's, and we started with, you know, wanting your life to be different. What would you change? I think it starts in that area. So I think that your truth has something to do with, if I could change something, if I could have something different, what would it be, is a good starting point for me.
So are you saying that if we feel like we need something changed in our life, that we're not really living our own personal truth?
Well, I don't know that I would quite say it that way, but what I might say is that we have a tendency to want to avoid and resist and suppress some uncomfortable situations, and I think that recently I was somebody very wise called me the soul whisperer, because I can sometimes hear that calling that people have inside. And if there's something in our life that we don't like or want to change or wish was different, I think a lot of times we tend to not deal with that, not confront that, not know how to handle that. It's a little too uncomfortable. And I think our personal truth lives in that journey and lives in that exploration.
Well, then what do you feel are the main obstacles to our personal truth?
Well, you know, I think that people have either reoccurring patterns or that they're not able to manifest intentions. And I think that there's some patterns that occur underneath that, that, you know, sometimes we, you know, as part of our journey, as part of our exploration, what are some of these patterns? What are some of these defense mechanisms? What are some of the suppressed feelings that are blocking us from being able to tap our full potential, from being able to express our best, from being able to have the kind of fulfillment that we really want?
Okay. Now, this show goes to a lot of families that are dealing with their teens. In some cases, they're doing it in a beautiful way. In other cases, it's a little more of a struggle. Now, transitioning from a teen to an adult is certainly a critical time for all of us. Do you feel that society's expectations and temptations present roadblocks for teens today as far as establishing balance and honesty in their own life?
Well, I think that's just part of some of the very significant and overwhelming stimulation that kids get, and I want to address that, but I want to first back up just a little bit, if I can, for a moment to this whole thing about feelings and defense mechanisms and patterns, because we went through that really fast, and it's sometimes a lot to comprehend, but, you know, and I'm not saying that this is the absolute truth in the whole wide world, but here's how I view the world, and here's how I live my life, is that our outside world is a reflection of our inside world. And so if there's something in our life that isn't exactly the way that we want, it's reflecting something on the inside that isn't exactly the way that we want. And so if, like, there's an example that, and this is a little, you know, it'll take like about a minute to say it, and it's a little jargony in the beginning, but I think it'll make the point really clear, and I think it'll make the rest of what we do a little bit more understandable. The question is, why does a good feeling go away and the bad feeling stick around? And the short version of this is that, for example, if I get a new car, I have the experience of the new car for about a week, and then it goes away and it just becomes my car. How come that feeling goes away? It goes away because we experience the experience of the experience. That is to say, we're breathing, we're talking about it, we're sharing about it, we might even read the owner's manual, we're going to play with all the gadgets, and then all of a sudden we're done with that and there's no more new car-ness. But let's say, for example, we're driving down the road late and we get in an accident and we end up not wanting to drive on freeways late at night anymore, might be the defense mechanism. So how come that defense mechanism's there? How come that feeling sticks around? And I would say that that feeling sticks around because it's an unexperienced experience of that experience. That is to say that it's likely that you held your breath. It's likely that you didn't share fully. It's likely that you didn't take your friends to the, you know, to the site and share with them as fully as you did your experience of the new car. So the hope, one of the things that makes people get the kinds of results that they do when we do the kind of work that we do is that we're looking at what are the suppressed feelings that these patterns, for example, not driving on a freeway late at night anymore, what are the suppressed feelings that need to be processed through? Okay, now, does that make sense? Is that enough? Because now I'll go on to the question about the children.
Sure.
Well, yeah, okay. And yeah, that's fine. But, I mean, it really kind of brings another question is that how do we then focus on the fact of a good feeling and, you know, and keep it? I understand you're saying, okay, well, here are some of the ways that we might be able to get rid of the bad feeling, but it seems like, from what you're saying, our focus needs to be, when we have that good feeling, how do we keep that? You know, it's, you know, you know, when you mention new car, if we go to the car wash, one of the smells you can buy for your car is called new car. You know, can we also get that feeling of new car in the same sense that we can buy the smell of new car? Is that going to bring back to us that wonderment that we had when we first got it?
Well, I might put on a different pair of glasses, Alan, if it was me. I might put on the pair of glasses that life is always giving us exactly what we need in this moment to expand deeper into our inner truth and to express our lives more fully. So what's happening right now, and can I be present with what's happening right now, and can I experience my car the way that the car is right now presenting to me, whether it's a new car or a regular car or a car that I've had an accident in? So what I find in working with people is if we can free up some of these unresolved patterns and some of these emotional issues and some of these relationship concerns that are occupying some measurable part of who we are, if we can free that up, it allows us to have the level of presence and ability to experience what's so in this moment, which is seems to be what all of some of the, you know, big spiritual people are talking about, Eckhart Tolle and, you know, just numerous other people about being able to experience the present moment. And I think that's what allows us to do that.
Okay, so if we take that along the lines of now a relationship, you're saying stay in the present moment. I just spoke with a friend of mine a couple of days ago that was talking to me about meeting him in another city and that his wife was going to fly in, but he said she was staying in another room even though he would have been gone for 6 weeks, but they were meeting in a different city. And that because of the things that she likes to do and the things he likes to do and the times they like to do it, they're going to stay in a separate room. And I said, you got to be kidding me. And I said, I would hope that after 6 weeks, you guys couldn't wait to be in the same room. He said, you know, we've been married for over 20 years. He goes, that ship has sailed. And I felt sad for him. So now how do we, and this I think is something that a lot of people struggle with, how do we, it's terrible, how do we get the new car smell in our relationship?
Well, I love what you're saying, but I want to look at it from two different perspectives, because one, I love the perspective of what their truth is in this moment based on their circumstances as separate rooms. Now, I don't know if that's reflecting their highest value system, and I don't know what that's actually reflecting, but they're not being directed by other people's considerations. They're not being directed by, you know, other people's judgments or expectations or what they think the other person might think of them. That happens to be what their truth is in the moment. Now, is that a reflection of their travel schedule, or is that a reflection of something else that's occurred? Now, sometimes in relationships it happens to be something to do with resentment. So is there enough resentments or something like that that's inside their relationship that the level of intimacy and closeness and love isn't available anymore? And then if so, it would be really cool to address those patterns. And if not, it would be really cool to celebrate that they can have separate rooms in the spite of what other people might judge about them.
Well, I think that's a great point. And I know that in my, and maybe it was biased, you know, in my thinking, but the way that I took the conversation was that he wasn't necessarily happy about the fact that that ship had sailed.
And see, one of the things you started to ask me earlier is about kids and the reflections of all the stimulation that's occurring in society. And parents place expectations on kids, and we have judgments. And I don't know, Alan, you might have been exactly right, and there might have been some sadness in there, and there might have been some issue in there, and there might have been something to go explore with the person, and there might have been a way to support them. Or that might be a reflection of the judger, sorry to be, but in this case
no
you,
problem.
That might be a reflection, and I'm going to make up something for me because I don't know you personally and I have no idea what your issues are, and I'm not even saying that you have an issue here, but I could see that if I had a history of failed relationships and I saw that somebody else was sitting in that room and I hadn't, in separate rooms, and I hadn't processed out my own resentment and my own grief and my own loss and my own feelings of unlovableness, etc., I could easily project that reality onto that person, and it's really more a reflection in my expectation of that person. It's really more a reflection of what I haven't resolved for myself. How come I can't be present with that conversation and see what's so in the moment of now with him rather than be present with my judgment and assert sadness? And maybe it's true. Maybe what I'm feeling is the person's sadness, and then I could be with that rather than my judgment about it or my expectation about it.
Well, I think you bring up a great point, and it's something that I've touched on as well, is that for many of us, the way in which we look at a particular situation speaks more about us than it does about the situation. So I think you bring up a great point.
And if I can, I'd like to now translate this and transfer this a little bit to parents and kids, because I think some of the same kinds of things go on here. And, you know, it's a little tougher because, you know, you and your friend have, a friendship kind of relationship connection. But parents and kids, that's a deep relationship. That's, mm-hmm. That's one of the most vulnerable relationships. And so now as a parent, one wants their child to have the best possible life and be the best and have the best and do the best. And, you know, there's a variety of strategies that parents employ, and there's also a variety of expectations and a variety of belief systems that they're going to impose on the child. And sometimes that might be a reflection more of what's unresolved for the parent in terms of their own patterns, in terms of their own failures, in terms of their own insecurities. And if I could make one point, and it's sort of like what we just talked about with you and your friend, one of the things that I think, and this is not, people shouldn't believe it because I think it, just feel what's true, you know, for each person can feel what's true and see what they should do. But what I think the most important thing a parent can do with their child is hang out in their reality and see what's going on for them and give them a chance to self-express and give them a chance to be heard. Because you mentioned earlier, there's all this, you know, stuff going on in society and all this stimulation going on for children. And so we, you know, as parents, we're going to go, okay, well, this is probably the thing that's the biggest going on, and I don't want this thing that's 90% in my kid's space to have some negative effect, and I'm going to go take some action to, you know, prevent it and help my kid deal with it. And it may not even be in your kid's, in your child's reality. So, you know, it's like there's really two things that are going on when there's an issue with a child. Number one is, what is the parent's expectation, and what is that a reflection of that's unresolved in the parent? And the most important thing is, what is the reality of the child? Like the way I want to say it to really drive it home as much as I can is that if you take yourself out of the equation and you want to be able to know the child's reality well enough that you can put yourself in their shoes and see how and why they're making every decision that they're making, because when you go into it and discover what their reality is, like an explorer, like a research expedition, like exploratory surgery, like a fact-finding mission, like really going in there and getting all the facts, every single thing that that child is doing makes total and perfect sense if you take the time to find out what's going on for them. And then when you do, if there's something that the child has a question about, it's a lot better to discover and process and debrief with the child what their own truth is and what their own participation is and what their own communication is, so that they can be fully expressed and connected to themselves rather than being, quote, manipulated into a parental strategy, if that makes sense.
Oh, I think it does.
It absolutely makes sense. And I see that a lot when parents come in, they're trying to get their child to be a certain way and do a certain thing, but that's not the reality of the child's life. So a lot for me is working with the parents to understand the children's point of view and the truth for them. So I really like what you have to say here.
Right, and I think a good question for both of you, and I think that it may have answered it, but you know, if parents have lost their own expectations, how are they going to reach their children and help them create a different outcome?
Who would you like to go first? Melody, do you want to?
Well, you're our guest, and
go ahead.
Talk all the time, so you go right ahead.
Go ahead, Nick.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm really glad Melody's there and participating, and thank you. And I want you to, you know, share as much as you want. But and Alan, I think you're right. I mean, I think we're on the right track. Is if we spend, I mean, I'm just looking at a way to make this the biggest point, because for me, this is the biggest point of everything that I want to do today. If we can let, as parents, if we can let go of our reality long enough to find out what's so for the child and spend just 5 minutes a day What was that like for you? What's most alive for you? How did you feel? What did you think? How was the outcome? What did you think about that? If you had it to do over again, would you do it differently? Is there something about it you don't like? Is there something about it remind you of negatively? Is there something about it that you feel that reminds you of something of the past? If you could change one thing, what would it be? If there's one thing that you wanted me to help with, what would it be? Was there something about it that you didn't say? Was there something about it that you withheld doing? Did you do that because of peer pressure? You know, those kinds of exploratory questions, you spend a little bit there rather than you did that, go to your room, and by the way, you're grounded, and by the way, this is the new strategy. You know, which one do you think might feel better if you were the receiver of it? And if you go back to when, you know, I'll go back to when I was a child. I always wanted to be the best that I could be, and I was either being the best that I knew or the best that I was taught. And the strategies that, and my parents were in a lot of ways really great, but in a lot of ways there's no owner's manual for a child, so how is it that you teach them the strategy? And you know, it never felt good to me when my parents imposed strategies on me. All it did was take me away from my truth, because now I'm having to manage the feelings that I have about their strategy, rather than looking at what's so for me about my reality without having to manage my parents.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love what you're talking about as far as inquisitive questions. And I've brought that up before as well, is ask real questions where you're going to get a real answer, as opposed to, and I've seen so many parents, and you know, the question becomes, so how was your day? The answer of the child is, it was fine, and they go on and play Xbox or something like that. You know, but the questions that you're bringing up, those are the questions to where the child's going to have to think, and as they're thinking, you're now going to get something that, as you're saying in here, it's going to have more truth to what they're really going through.
Well, and also, too, Alan, I think that it's what we're accustomed to. I mean, when my parents used to ask me how was my day, I'd want out of the conversation as quick as I could. I didn't want to have to deal with their judgments or their strategies or their imposition of what they think I should do. But if I was trained and used to how was your day meant, I could share what was most alive in me, and I knew it was going to be a conversation that if there was anything going on in my life that I wanted to talk about, then that would be really cool. So it's also, how are we conditioning our kids? I mean, I was conditioned that it wasn't necessarily safe to be myself, and it wasn't necessarily safe to tell the truth. And so I want to create an environment for everybody, but for particularly children, because we are so bombarded in our society today with more stimulation of more kinds, with more things to hook into. But I also think that the universe is perfect, and everything that goes on for each person is a reflection of their own inner world. So what part of my inner world and what part of my child's inner world needs, you know, would be appropriate to put some under the microscope and share and explore and participate with a little bit?
Right, but I think what you're talking about, too, is providing an arena for your child to develop that relationship with you and learn new ways to think and be and find their own truth and what works for them as opposed to what works for the parents. Oftentimes, parents step in and just put their truth on it and their way of doing things just to make life easier for themselves and shutting down the child, and eventually they stop speaking up and, like you said, just not share everything that they want to, but just say what their parents want to hear.
You know, I'm so with you that I don't know how to underscore it deep enough. And, you know, parents want nothing but the best for their children. But sometimes our, you know, as adults, our strategies are limited, and we don't have a role model, and we're operating over the top of all of our unworkable relationships and divorces and wounded hearts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I'm not even so sure. It's not such a bad idea, but I'm not so sure the main event should be have a relationship with your parents. I think that for me, the main event would be, how does the child have a relationship with themselves? How can they connect the most with themselves? I think as a byproduct, the connection with the parents would be really useful and really deep and really profound and really close. But all I ever wanted as a child, I mean, was something really simple. Would somebody explain to me how this works? And when I asked my parents why, I stopped going to them, my dad around age 4 and my mom around age 6, I didn't know these words then, but they were lying. I mean, I wasn't getting accurate answers. Even something as simple as, you know, how long is the babysitter going to be here for? I didn't get accurate answers about that. I didn't understand how to process my feelings. I didn't understand how the world worked. And all I wanted to do was be the best that I could. And I'm, you know, went through some issues with my parents at some points in my life. But I mean, you know, the closeness developed in my 20s and 30s, and everything got much, much, much. You know, we had a good relationship then. But in the when I was young, my parents were in the way of my happiness, not part of the strategy for it.
Well, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. So don't go away.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back. We're back with the author, Nick Berar, of Your Choice, Allowing Your Emotions to Empower You. We were just talking in regards to the relationship of children and their parents, and some of the ways in which we can speak to them in such a way that they're going to feel comfortable enough to really talk about their own personal truth, to talk about what's really going on with them. Now, Nick, I want to touch on some questions, and we had some that were emailed in, which actually, by the way, we had quite a few, so I think there was a lot of people that were interested when they got the press release to get some of their questions to you. This one says, working with teens for over 30 years, I haven't seen a great deal of difference in the basic attitudes, but what I have observed is an inability to focus and think in an orderly manner. Do you believe the massive exposure to such diverse media is responsible for this? And if so, how are we in the educational community supposed to deal with it?
Well, Alan, I think we touched a little bit on that, but let me underscore that a little bit. You know, is the exposure to diverse media responsible? I'm not so sure I want to put the responsibility there. But what I will say is that, you know, even with the, you know, invention of the Internet, I got a lot more stimulation in my life, and now social media, now this and now that. And, you know, there's more and more for kids than for sure whenever I was around. But again, I think that, you know, what it is that helps me focus when I'm scattered is somebody sitting with me or me sitting with me and taking one thing at a time and going, okay, in the midst of all this chaos, in the midst of all this confusion, first of all, what in the heck is true for me right now? The truth might be I need to go take a nap. The truth might be, you know, I need to start, you know, deciding what to do about Project A. I've been procrastinating, you know, somehow what is really what's so for me? So again, I think as educators, I think as parents, I think as adults, I think as you know, potential mentors, I think that the most important thing is to sit down and go, okay, you've got all this stimulation. It looks like this is going on for you. And when you sit with the child, they might go, you know what, I don't even care about that. I'm really bummed about, you know, my parents are fighting, or I'm really bummed about that my friend can't come out this weekend. And that's what deserves the attention, is that truth, not necessarily the external truth. So the second biggest distinction I'd like to make for our show today is that what deserves the most attention might not be what's on the outside, but it might be what's on the inside. And just maybe, just maybe our external world is nothing more than a reflection of where we are on our, in our inner world.
All right. Well, now tell us, how do we get a young person to share that with us?
Well, I think if you ask them, it would be really simple. I think that if they, you know, and again, we sometimes have some history with our parents, and sometimes, you know, we know that it's not safe to tell the truth. So, you know, each person has to look and see what their own journey is with their, you know, own individual family members or the people they're mentoring or whoever it is. But the first step is to make it safe. And I find that kids actually will open up much faster. They haven't been as harmed. They haven't been as hurt. They haven't been as abused. They don't have as many layers of patterns. I find if you just sincerely really want to ask and you really want to know, they'll just tell you.
I found that to be true, too. When I work with a lot of kids in the juvenile justice system, a lot of them have been very abused and neglected, and they're very hurt, and they're very guarded. But if you're genuine and you really care, it comes across. They know who's being in their truth to them and being open to them and providing a space for them, and that they matter and that you care, and they do open up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And again, and we work with some of the same kids, and where we're picking them up from those locations. And what we find is just the same thing. If we're speaking to them from a point of honesty, and we get that from some of them, where they will start talking to us about things that they haven't spoken to anyone else before, and they'll say, you know, for the first time, I really feel like somebody's listening, or for the first time, I really feel like you're not judging. And I think that's huge in their life, and especially if they're coming out of an environment like that where they really have felt like they needed to shut down to be able to allow them to open up. Then, but the next key is that we need to pass that on to where the parents can then do that, because it doesn't work if just somebody that's a professional within the industry, you know, has the ability to get them open up if they go back to the same environment and we haven't passed that on to where the parents can now do the same.
And, you know, Alan, I think it is huge for them when they're coming out of some kind of turmoil or crisis to have somebody, what I would call, validate their reality. And I would capitalize all huges, but now I'd also like to add to that, I think it's mandatory, but it's not just during crisis or turmoil. I think it would be really huge, all capitalized, to do that for good events that they come out celebrating, because, you know, I think we're indoctrinated as a culture. I think we pass down patterns generation after generation. I mean, in families that have love, they don't even, you know, they just out of history, they don't communicate, I love you. So, but the point here that I'm trying to make is that not only would it be really cool to validate the child's reality when there's some crisis, it might be really cool to validate the child's reality when there's something to validate, when there's something to celebrate. Like, what was the big part about for you about that? What did you enjoy the most? What did you feel? What need got met? What was the most thing that you liked about it? Where else would you like to see this in your life? If you had it to do over again, could it have been any better? And how and why? It's the same kind of validation, in my opinion, that would make the any person, but particularly young people, be able to connect to a deeper part of themselves and their truth, and be able to learn more about life from the good things and the bad things, just from processing what's so for them about their truth of this experience, whether the experience one would deem externally negative or whether one would deem the experience externally, you know, positive.
Well, I think that's really a good point that you brought up, because a lot of times we focus on the negative, but it is important to validate the good in people's life, especially young children, and allow them to have that space to really enjoy that truth and feel those good feelings and be okay with that when externally the outside world may be jealous of it or this or that, and that's where some bullying sometimes comes in. But at the same time, you know, just to give them that space and really allow them to be who they are and enjoy those feelings and know that's just the way it is at this moment and it's all okay.
Yeah, and I was going to say that, and that was something that she brings up that I brought in into a kindergarten class and have continued to pass on, and that was the term, catch them doing something good. You know, is that, and I saw it actually in a class where, I mean, you know, everybody's acting out, you know, the kids are running around, they're doing all kinds of stuff. And if you can get them to, you know, when you ask them to do something, the first one that sits down, crosses their legs and puts their hands in their lap like they're supposed to, and draw all the attention to them at that point, to focus on, look how wonderful Kathy is doing. Kathy is the first one here. She is sitting down. She's crossed her legs. She's sitting there just exactly as she was asked. And if the parents and the teachers, if they can continue to focus on that, that if you do that, all of a sudden the other kids that want that attention will start going, that's what I have to do. The problem that we see too much in the schools and sometimes in our homes is the attention keeps going to that one, to where they go, you know, Johnny or Billy is doing this, you know, or, you know, Mark or Betty are doing that, and they continually focus on that. And then you have the other kids that really end up acting out because they realize that was the only way anybody was getting attention.
Yeah, I'm really glad Melody is bringing us down this part of the conversation even deeper, because I think it's really true. The first part, superficially, what's true is that what you put your attention on expands. But the other part that is beginning to start to reveal itself and come out a little bit from behind the woodwork is when there has been numerous people that I have worked with that have been emotionally traumatized as much from, and I'm going to say it in a second, but I want to bring these into that the manifestations of negativity in life and the amount of dysfunctional patterns that arise from, whether it's emotional abuse or my dad/mom/primary caretaker never acknowledged the good that I did, are equal in effect. When I'm working with people, I have to unwind and unravel and heal as much with, I didn't get validated or acknowledged from the good, as all the way up to as bad as, you know, some kind of verbal abuse or whatever kind of emotional abuse situation you want to put them in. The defense mechanisms, the pain, and the manifestations in the future are equally traumatizing.
Absolutely.
So therefore, I think it's mandatory to both validate the person's reality for, you know, externally negative circumstances to externally positive circumstances is really the point.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I want to touch on another question that came in. And again, I want to tell everybody, we appreciate the questions that you send in. We appreciate if they come in via email. You're also welcome to call. But this particular question says, on your site, you bring up the word direction. It says, resolving internal blocks to your inner truth. Can you explain the steps you use in helping your clients see these blocks and deal with them?
Absolutely, and I'll give you the short version, and anything that we want to expand on, we can, because this, I could go on for, you know, a really long time about this, but because I've been doing this for more than 25 years, and we always get consistently outstanding results, and consistently people say this is the biggest thing that's changed their life out of, you know, literally out of anything, and it's because of the principles of direction. So really briefly, direction is an acronym for how to have personal growth in your life, whether it's with anybody, it doesn't matter. If there's real life changes that occur, the D stands for dignity, which is to face those, to face your conflicts. The I stands for imagination. You know, imagine how I want it to turn out. Where do I want it to go? The R is for responsibility. It's up to me, regardless of what's going on with other people, regardless of what's going on externally, the responsibility is mine. We got D-I-R-E. The E is for education. I've got to discover, identify what's stopping me. The C is for confront. I've got to deal with my unresolved feelings. I've got to find them. I've got to get them out of my body. Let's see what's next. The T is for trust those feelings. It's, I can't just confront them. I actually have to trust them, because they will lead me for something, to something good. And once I trust them, then I'll be able to initiate actions that will take me in a direction that's consistent with who I am, my truth, and my reality. The O is for opportunities that will reveal themselves in that particular situation after taking those actions. And the N is for network with people who are doing some kind of work, some way like this, because I believe we can't do it by ourselves.
That's really great. Did you come up with that?
I actually did.
It's fabulous.
Very nice.
I can do that in 2 minutes, or I can literally spend hours and hours doing it, and also making up exercises along the way. And everything that I've ever put together for 25 years is in some way, some part of that, even if it's experiential exercises that are part of the confronting feelings or identifying patterns part.
Well, and unfortunately, we don't have hours, but we do have, we still have about 10 minutes. So why don't you walk us through a little bit in regards to some of the steps involved in your workshops?
Wow. Okay. I think one of the reasons, Alan, that people get really good results, and I feel so, so extremely lucky and grateful because I get to express a part of me that is part of my truth that I've had to reach into and journey into for a long time before I could actually get to the place where I've now been doing this and actually even training other facilitators now for well over 25 years. But I think one of the things that makes our program unique is that it's a two-step process, really, to apply those principles that give one direction in their life. And it doesn't say give one instructions. It doesn't say give one opinions. It doesn't say provide advice or strategies. What it is it's direction for them to tap into their own higher truth and their own full self-expression. And really, it's a very simple two-step process that occurs when I work with people. The first step is an evaluation, and then the second part is after the evaluation, we will custom design a program that is specific for that person's unmet needs and for that person's particular circumstance. So they don't have to sit in, you know, years of therapy. They don't have to do public workshops. They don't have to unwind issue after issue. There's just a simple two steps, and usually within a couple long weekends, we can pretty much resolve pretty much, you know, whatever it is that unravels itself and presents in the evaluation.
So do you work on individually then on the workshops, if I'm hearing you clearly?
Melody, I do now. I haven't done public workshops. When, you know, everything morphs and goes how it goes. I started out doing work one-on-one with people. Then I ended up training therapists. And from there, I ended up leading public workshops for years. And then I ended up training facilitators again under, you know, my umbrella. And then I also trained facilitators under other people's umbrellas. And I actually have had the privilege of working with some of the most well-known facilitators on the planet, and that's been some of my career highlight. And now I'm finding myself that what's occurring mostly is that usually by the time somebody gets to me, they've tried lots of other stuff, they've done lots of other things, they've been to workshops, they've been to therapy, and what they're reporting is that for the most part they're glad that they did the things that they did and that it was some way helpful, but when they get really real underneath it, it didn't really do what it hoped that they would do, and there's still something else that they want out of life. And so by then, if they get to me, they're usually have done those things, and they're usually high achievers, sometimes high-profile individuals. They really want the personal growth. They really want the fulfillment. They can really hear that inner calling, and they'll take a lot of action to get there. And so it's true that now I'm finding myself working with individuals, and then that way I can do the little nuances that are required for them to go significantly deeper rather than when I was doing, you know, rooms full of people. There were things I wanted to do with an individual, but it would not be applicable to the room, so I never got to do that.
Well, and you mentioned evaluation, and you went over it rather quickly because we don't have a whole lot of time. But, I mean, I think that's one of the things that's really, really important, because a good evaluation is really preparation to be able to help. And it seems to play a large part in your coaching. Tell us a little bit about what that entails.
It does play a really important part, and I love the evaluation for a whole bunch of reasons, but I guess I'll start with one of the reasons why I love it. Anytime I've done something good with somebody, I've always wanted to ask more questions. I've always had something more I've wanted out of it. I always knew there was something more I could get. But either my hour was up or my seminar was up or my time was up. The thing that I love about the evaluation is there is no set ending time for it. It takes a couple hours to do, maybe three, maybe four, maybe five, whatever, but there is no time frame. The person gets to come in with all the different things they're presenting with, all the different issues they have, all the different topics they have, all the different concerns that they have. They get to ask every single thing about every single unrelated topic they could possibly imagine until they're all done. But the other part that I like a lot about it, too, is I get to do every single thing that I want to do, and I get to go explore every single thing that I want to explore. And sometimes, you know, I might try something and it doesn't necessarily produce anything good, but lots of times I'll get these little nuances and little intuitive hits, or there'll be these little energy fields that I'll follow that don't present as dominant energy fields, and then all of a sudden we're onto something, you know, like really cool that I would have never gotten to in seminars. But basically what occurs in the evaluation is that, you know, there are unresolved emotional feelings, there are unresolved emotional patterns, there are unresolved external circumstances. So what we do in the evaluation is we take all those, and it's kind of like a puzzle. We put them all, I put them all on the floor, put them in the right order, and after the person's all done with everything, it becomes really clear of what's the one, and this is what, another thing that I like about it is, not me that says this, it's the people that have been through the years of therapy, the people that have been through years of workshop. They go, wow, that evaluation was so good. I got more in that 3 hours than I got in 4 years of therapy, or I got in the last 5 years of workshops, or I just did that name brand big time workshop that, you know, it took 2 years to get through and cost me $20,000. You know, there's all kinds of stories I could tell you about that, because the evaluation just unravels all of that. I mean, we don't process through or heal any of that. We just kind of identify what's underneath the whole thing that's holding it all together, that if you did that one thing, the rest of the stuff would go away. And so that's what happens in the evaluation.
Well, and it sounds like many people are gaining quite a bit just from the evaluation itself.
It's really true. And, you know, if they want to also include it in the fee of the evaluation, I will custom design a program that will resolve and address and resolve whatever we find. Or if it's not appropriate for the person for whatever reason, it's not a good time, or they can't pay my fees, or whatever it is, they are more than welcome, you know, to take it to wherever they find that works well for the way that they work. They can do it someplace locally if they wish. Or I actually have two therapists that I have a contract with that will also potentially work with them depending upon what the issues are and their availability.
And I have an email that came up, and you might have already asked this, but I think it's important to ask anyway. It says, I looked at your website, and it said that feelings are signals calling for personal growth and positive change. How is the work you do different than what my therapist does with me?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what the therapist does, so I can't really tell you. You know, I don't work on any psychotherapeutic models. All I can tell you is that the very first thing that I did 25 years ago when I was looking to see if what I was doing was psychologically sound is I went to a therapist that had a good reputation in the personal growth community that I was involved with. And I said, hey, here's what I'm doing. What do you think? And he said, you know, I think it's probably pretty good. Will you put me through it? And oh, by the way, will you put my staff through it at the same time? So here I am, this young 20-whatever-year-old kid, you know, in some clinic full of, you know, middle-aged therapists with, you know, letters after their name, and I'm delivering this program. You know, that was a really unique part of, you know, my own personal journey and sitting in some of my own inadequacies and uncomfortablenesses. But the end product was just melody profound for me because, and the hair standing up on my arms as I share, they got so much value personally out of the work that they couldn't provide for each other as staff members that they asked me to come in and work out of their clinic and train them how to do what I do so that they could produce those kind of results with their clients. So my business got off the ground into public workshops then by working with the whole staff of you know, all the clients of those particular practitioners and therapists.
Mm-hmm. All right. You know, Nick, I just glanced over at the time, and we are almost out of time. We have about 30 seconds. So now I'm sure that, I mean, if there are people out there, how do they get a hold of you if they want to get the book, if they want to just talk to you? What is the best way for them to do that?
Well, I think the website's really good. Nick at nickberard.com, I think, would be terrific.
Okay. Nick, thank you so much. I appreciate this. I wish we had more time. But I am thankful for what it is that you're doing, and we look forward to having you on again sometime.
Alan, I really appreciate the opportunity to share some time with you. Melody, I don't think I've ever met you before. I'm glad to have had my first interaction with you. And Alan, I again just applaud the work that you're doing in the community and the stand that you have. Thank you for the privilege of participating with you.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And again, for everybody out there, if you have questions, if you are driving and you weren't able to write that down, it's Nick Berar, NickBerar.com. Or go to our website at answers4thefamilyblog.com. Give us your comments. We will get it to Nick. Or if you have comments on other suggestions for the show, please do so. Again, for everybody out there, seek to catch someone doing something good every day.
To Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk